pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Hour number three is now underway. Coming up here in about a half hour, Will Hampson, P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular, will make time for us. In the meantime, debate last night, statewide candidates. We had Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, and we were unable to do the Senate debate because Barry Moore had to be in D.C. for votes. But, by the way, we do have Barry Moore scheduled for Thursday morning at 9:30. So those of you listening, he'll be on the program. We'll have Jared Hudson on. The plan is to get them all through one more time at least. We'll even try Wes Allen, if you're out there listening, Angie. We want to get him on. But John Wall, Wes Allen, Jay Mitchell, Catherine Robinson, and Barry Moore and Jared Hudson, obviously. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. All you got to do is text me, and we will respond to what is on your mind. But back to this text here, I think it's Coleman Texter. The point I was trying to make about the campaign finance side of it, it came up in the debate. It wasn't a question, but it was unsolicited, and that's fine because what happens in these debates, they have an amount of time that they have allotted, and they can go back and forth. And, you know, as we've seen, you don't have to talk about what I ask. You talk about whatever you want. I think it's, you know, sometimes not the best tactic, but such as it was, they answered a question and they brought up the who's getting money from who. Not an unimportant thing, but at this point of the contest, when we're talking about dark money and those types of things, With just a week and a day to go, is that really how you win the war of ideas? Is that really how you win the election, more importantly? You're not trying to win a debate trophy. We have a candidate here who goes all out on debate trophy but loses elections. So that's just a minor criticism, not a big deal. When you brought up the idea that that this stuff's not unimportant. Ultra Rudder. Jared took a dig at Barry for not taking questions. Did you offer to ask Jared some questions? I did, and they declined. The questions were pretty much going to be the questions that I had planned for the debate. The question I always like to ask candidates for federal office in Alabama Republican primaries, we have a history, a legacy of sending maybe two kinds of, there's a brand here. There's the Richard Shelby brand, Trent Lott, Thad Cochran, Hal Heflin. And they play the Senate game. They play the House game. And the objective there is ultimately to be the appropriator, to steer money toward your state. And there's value in that. Sometimes it's what people want. And then there's the other brand, and it's more of your, not necessarily like the Rand Paul, hey, I got a point to make here, or Ted Cruz, I'm going to filibuster this to make my point. But you do want to represent these ideological values in the Senate chamber and the House chamber. You do want to make sure that nothing bad is going to sneak into a bill. You want to talk about things like welfare reform, judicial reform, that you need to have these public policy issues, and they need to be expressed from this ideological standpoint that represents the people of the state. Immigration. I mean, you know the issues. And it's not that they're necessarily passing a bill to address them, but they need to be on the radar. They need to be taken into consideration when you do pass a big budget, a big minibus or omnibus or whatever. You do need that discussion. And we have a history of sending Jeff Sessions, Tommy Tuberville, those type of lawmakers. To some degree, Gary Palmer, Mo Brooks, certainly. Barry Moore. So the question I would have had is, like, well, where do you see yourself in that legacy? More importantly, when it comes to appropriating money and getting money back to Alabama, how do you straddle that fence? Because we spend a lot of time talking about debt and deficits. Well, you could talk a big game about that and have your hand out over here. It's a delicate balance. And the thing that makes me cringe a lot when I do hear lawmakers talk about, let's get our fair share. What is our fair share? Because in reality, our fair share is X amount of debt per family, per household. When we start talking about fair share, what does that mean exactly? Where do you see yourself? Because a lot of lawmakers, particularly from Alabama, well, they're going to pass this spending bill anyway. So we might as well get what we can out of it. But then if you tell all 100 senators and all 435 members of the House that, and then it's just a food fight. But you got to start somewhere. And these are very esoteric kind of discussions you have in these settings. I get it. Maybe not steeped in reality necessarily, but that's where I was going to take it with the Senate debate last night. Something we haven't talked about at all, and maybe this is not necessarily a Republican issue, but I think it used to be, is health care. Will we ever see a day when we do something to the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act? It's not infallible. Even if you like it. It's just a wealth redistribution mechanism, essentially. And the fundamental flaw with it, in my mind, was we conflated health care with health insurance. And then obviously, I mean, we could have talked about the military service or whatever. I don't know. Does that matter? It's the hot topic. There's a lot of buzz about it. There's an ad that's coming out suggesting stolen valor, but it's going to be drowned out. But these are more policy oriented back and forth. And who's got the best ideas? And I think with Senate, there's way more wiggle room there. There's way more distinctions between these two candidates than the two AG candidates, the two lieutenant governor candidates. Sorry, mommy issues, you're still banned. Jerry, that's a very Christian way to describe this mayor and the former mayor. Both of them are almost as bad as the people who they were running against. I disagree. I can't even Mobile having Barbara Drummond or Sam Jones, Fred Richardson. I don't know. You could believe that if you want to. Jason, I hope all your listeners accept textures, accept Pastor Johnson's challenge to get involved and contact our local officials about the rainbow banners and why they are acceptable. I know I will. Yeah, it's just this can't just be shrugged off. Listen, is it really going to impact your daily life? Probably not. But there is an abuse of your trust here. And then there is this wearing down. That's the hope. Like, okay, we're going to do this thing, and we're going to make it so time and cost prohibitive for you to fight. And then later on down the road, we're going to do something else, bigger. And then we'll have a fight, but we're going to be persistent. And then at some point, you're just going to shrug it off. I don't have time to deal with this. And there's a slippery slope here. That if you're going to allow one thing to go on, and that's why this is important, because I always feel like, why do we have to do this? There's a clear controversy here. There's a clear backlash here. And these city council members and these mayors, and they just say, I don't want to deal with these hot button social issues. I'm trying to make city government work. I don't have time for this. Just give them what they want. Just give the pride folks what they want, and maybe they'll leave us alone. Well, the opposite is true. The people who don't want this, just give them what they want. Maybe they'll leave you alone, too. There's a back and forth here. It's just that I feel like the pro-LGBTQ pride celebratory people are vastly outnumbered here. They will die on the hill, but make them die on the hill and go fight another battle. I got a lot from Mike here. Let's start here. It doesn't sound like the pastor knows much about the city, has pushed Pride Month garbage downtown, and he's definitely forgot how hard Trump's campaign in 2024 pushed to get the LGBTQ vote, or appear LGBT friendly. Or he's just masterful at gaslighting. Also, my feelings wouldn't be hurt if hypothetical of Will Ainsworth being governor happened. Well, I'll say this about Pastor Johnson. I mean, he was the first guy to say something about this. You remember, this is where how he kind of wound up on the map. He gave the invocation. And he prayed that Mobile would not embrace this agenda as they have clearly. That upset a lot of people. But what is the pastor of a big church supposed to do? Jeff, I don't think the city of Mobile put up those flags. I work downtown in the department that does all those banners downtown. When I came to work on Monday, one of the head bosses asked me if we put the flags up. I told him that I didn't think we did. He made the statement that it must have been the Downtown Business Alliance. And then, sorry, I was wrong. The city did put up the pride flags. I apologize for not knowing the facts correctly. What I understand it as that if you're willing to pay for it, there's a fee associated when you give due notice. And if you want to celebrate Arbor Day, or you want to celebrate Earth Day, or you can do that. And this is available to you. And for whatever reason, we have designated Pride Month as a holiday in the eyes of the city of Mobile. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You got to know. Never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, text me. Terry, Jeff, I don't understand your objection to a month that celebrates a group which have one of their tenets being the promotion of self-loathing and genital mutilation. Fire Dog. What am I going to have for lunch? That's more what's on my mind. I wish I could say it was more important than that. Well, that's let us know how that internal struggle works out for you, Fire Dog. I'm eager to hear. Jeff, you could have just answer yes or no. Is this Pastor Passway Church the visits the White House often? Maybe one of the Lord's words for White House. He does visit the White House a lot. He's on the President's Faith Council. I don't know I don't know that's necessarily relevant. The reason he kind of fits into the portfolio of this program is that it's hard to find like church clergy, if you will, to talk, at least public policy. There's a real fear within a lot of churches that if you talk about politics, and it's not just yay Trump, yay Trump, yay Trump, I get it, but my experience is that there's sort of this prevailing sentiment about politics within a lot of church groups that, you know, it's all bad. It's all idolatry. It's all putting what goes on in the state before God. You're not supposed to do that. That's at the purest level. Then there's also this, and this is where it really gets me, is there's a lot of like church pastors who really dodge the political discussions because they don't want it to turn away parishioners. They don't want people to leave their church because their pastor, their teaching pastor, or whoever it may be in the hierarchy, has a social issue policy disagreement or even any kind of policy disagreement. The politics is so polarizing on its own, but for the health of the church, for the, you know, maybe it's just, you know, a financial reason. You want to do all these good things, but you need this financial support. To get there, you need people in the pews on Sunday giving, and that you avoid it. You know that we're going to agree to disagree. And that's become like way more of a prevailing sentiment probably in the last decade than it ever has. And then there's just sub denominations, mainline denominations, Protestant denominations, who have not only have they steered their parishioners away from the social side of the conservative issues, they're embracing more liberal behavior, more. And listen, it's not that you want to go to church and be condemned, but you don't need to condone some of this. And that's also happening in the church. It's happening in the Catholic Church too. And that becomes a difficulty here. Like, you need to find church leadership's got to be outspoken on. There's just some things you cannot compromise on. Obviously, I think abortion is the biggest. The value of life. A discussion we can always have about. But the church crosses that line. Now, we could have the public policy discussion and divorce it from religion if you'd like. Well, I'm just saying, there's just some topics that the church has to take a stand on. And they can't shy away from it. They have to be a word that was used a lot last night by John Wall was unapologetic. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles.
Kinda welcome back to Jeff Porter's show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for hanging out with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Time permitting, I'll try to get through the texts that are still remaining. Joining us now, he's from P2 Public Affairs. You hear him here on the Jeff Porter Show every Tuesday about this time. Will Hampson joins us on the line. Will, how are you?
I'm here.
Will, how are you?
Jeff, doing great. Thanks for letting me join, as always.
Hey, thanks for making time. It's election day. It's Tuesday, and we're fortunate enough to have you here on Tuesdays. But I asked Bradley this earlier in the program. You may know a little bit more about South Carolina than the average person. Any expectations there in that gubernatorial election?
Yeah, I mean, I think super interesting. I had one person describe it to me, Jeff, just looking at the polling and how closely kind of the top four or five candidates are, that bad weather in one part of the state could end up, you know, letting someone jump someone else into a potential runoff. So they're all super close. I think they all have a shot. I think the expectation is that at the end of the day, it's going to be the Lieutenant Governor Pam Evatt, who has the Trump endorsement, against the fairly popular Attorney General Alan Wilson. His dad's been a congressman for a long time, super, you know, connected in the state.
So it's Joe Wilson's son.
That's right.
You lie, Joe Wilson, right?
Exactly. So I think that's kind of the expectation. But you also have Ram Reddy, who is a very wealthy, self-funding businessman. He's kind of been surging in the last couple weeks. He got into the race late, and so I think the question there is, did he have enough time, and how much of that surge are we going to see? Could he sneak into a runoff? But I think that the conventional wisdom, unless anything crazy happens, would be the lieutenant governor against the attorney general in a runoff.
Yeah, and that's sort of what Bradley said he thought would happen. Are you watching Maine at all? I mean, the Graham Plattner stuff is salacious, but I don't know how much that matters.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jeff, obviously we love to see it. I think it gives Susan Collins a better shot. But let's not forget, right? I mean, let's go down the list. We had John Fetterman, who could not put sentences together. I mean, needed, legitimately, devices made for, people that have had serious health issues, even to potentially debate. That didn't matter in Pennsylvania. We had an attorney general candidate in Virginia, in text discussing killing his potential political opponents. That didn't matter. So at the end of the day, obviously, I think this helps Susan Collins. I think she's shown an innate ability to survive, even when polls have shown, in days leading up to elections, that she was going to lose. I think this certainly helps her. But at the same time, we've seen across the country candidates, particularly Democrats, where they had severe baggage, and Democrat voters said, we don't really care. As long as you beat the Republican, we'll vote for you. So it'll be interesting to see at the end of the day how much it really does matter.
Well, I tell you what, though, the thing with Susan Collins, we do this every 6 years. She's got to lose. She raises a ton of money, and then she wins by 8, 9, 10 points.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the question just becomes, are we kind of tired of her, and is she going to be kind of a pushback to Donald Trump, right? I mean, are voters of Maine going to say, you know what, we've really liked Susan Collins for 20 years, but we're really upset with Donald Trump and the direction of the country.
But does anybody think
someone else in there?
Does anybody think Susan Collins is a rubber stamp for Donald Trump? They're crazy. She voted to impeach him or convict him.
Absolutely. Absolutely not, Jeff. But at the end of the day, if the difference in a leader Thune or a leader, a Democrat leader, whether it be Schumer or someone else, I think the voters of Maine can make the case that, maybe we have the ability to send a message to Donald Trump and make sure that Democrats control the Senate versus Republicans. And I think that could be a little bit of a way to push back and say, you know what, we like Susan Collins. She's done a good job for 20 years. She's definitely represented our state, but we're still going to send that message that we'd rather send a Democrat than a Republican.
And the problem with Maine, it's just a hard state to poll. It's in some ways like Alabama, but you know, the polling is always off there and you never really know what, because it's a rural state. It doesn't, you know, some of these people, I've spent some time there. I lived in Bangor, Maine for a year when I was a kid, and you know, there's still people in Maine, believe it or not, they live without electricity somehow. I mean, there's places in that state that get no cell coverage at all whatsoever. And my guess is when you get these public polls, they really have to rely on Bangor, on Portland, on Augusta, on the big population centers, and those are always going to lean left. And you don't really get it. It doesn't really capture the essence of the politics there.
Well, you're spot on there, Jeff. Obviously, it's tougher to reach voters in a state like Maine, but it's also tougher to get some of these negative stories into the bloodstream, right? I mean, if you're trying to make sure that every voter knows that Graham Plattner has Nazi tattoos, that he's cheated on his wife, that he's sent, you know, sexual messages potentially to underage people on different social media apps. I mean, all of these things that are a pretty big deal. You've kind of got the choir girl and Susan Collins, who, you know, for 20 years has done nothing wrong. Then you've got this guy who's clearly scandal ridden. But at the end of the day, if, you know, those of us in Alabama know more about it than the voters of Maine, who are a little bit tougher to reach, then it doesn't really matter. So obviously a big hurdle is getting your message out. And also making sure that you are defining your opponent. In this case, you would think it would be easy, but the dynamics of Maine certainly make it more difficult than a traditional state.
But we think as far as tonight goes, Plattner's probably going to secure the nomination. There's no way that that's going to change.
Absolutely. I think we already know the way that this is going to go. And I think that's also why you've seen a willingness to kind of drop this oppo now. If there was a chance that Plattner was not going to be the guy, I think you would have seen at least a little bit more of an effort to keep the powder dry until you were sure he was the nominee. So I agree with that. I think he's definitely going to be the guy. And I think the fact that we all know that is why you're starting to see a lot of this stuff come out now.
But this is who Democrats wanted. They wanted, Chuck Schumer didn't want Plattner. This is who more likely, I guess, correct the statement, Republicans want. He is perceivably a weaker candidate than what they would have had to face if they had Janet Mills.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you, Jeff. I think this is exactly who Susan Collins wants to run against, but that doesn't mean that it's in the bank, right? And so that's something to keep in mind here. It's still going to be an expensive race. It's still going to be an uphill battle. It's still going to be a tough fight for Republicans, but absolutely. If you were to look and say we could kind of create in a lab the perfect person for Susan Collins to run against, this would be it.
Well, and this is the real lesson here. Well, Democrats have these sort of candidates, and these aren't the establishment Democrat picks, clearly not. And it wasn't even that the pick was not even a it just never could get traction. And something tells me that I don't think Maine's alone here. I think you could see this in other places. Maybe you don't have a total douchebag like Graham Plattner kind of as the opponent, but there's going to be more of that. There's going to be more of these guys who don't really fit the mold of the AI-generated Democrat candidate in some of these states, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some states, you get the perfect candidate, right? I mean, if Democrats could choose kind of the ideal person to run in a state like Georgia, it would be a John Ossoff type. Likewise, you have the flip side where if you kind of create your nightmare scenario in Maine, and it is Graham Plattner. But look, Jeff, Democrats, and we forget this as Republicans, we have these conversations, right, about the establishment's ability to play in primaries, to kind of pick. We obviously talk about it here in Alabama, you know, the business council types and their ability to come in and be big spenders and kind of get the candidates that they want out of primaries. Well, Democrats have the same problem. I mean, they absolutely have a perception problem where they purely want to pick the person who is best suited to defeat the Republican. But voters don't always think like that. You've got the AOC and Bernie Sanders types out there who are ideological. You've got infrastructures that are being built, to kind of help support some of these insurgent far left wing candidates. So you've got this battle between, the Chuck Schumer world and the more progressive world that absolutely exists in a lot of these primaries. And I think you're going to continue to see a lot of these big fights, just as we're seeing on the right.
Well, it's just this, and there's no like progressive school, grooming school to get these guys tempered and more presentable for a DC establishment, or that they are what they are. They're more Bernie Sanders or AOC or whatever, and Democrats don't really have an answer for that. I for whatever reason, I think they look at like a Tallarico as like that, but I that's just not, maybe that works somewhere else, but they're really banking on a guy like that who they think checks boxes, but it's just not going to work.
And look, Jeff, I mean, they have to overcome their own DEI policies, right? I mean, if you're looking at it, Democrats have themselves to blame for Donald Trump being back in the White House, because they chose Kamala Harris to be the vice president purely for DEI reasons. They were told that they had to have a woman of color on the ticket, had to happen. Well, you know what? They paid for it because people were not buying it. We saw it when she ran in her own primary. She got clobbered. Nobody voted for her. And then she became elevated to the point where she eventually had to run for president. You can't skip over the black woman to go to a white guy like Newsom or someone else that could have maybe beaten Trump in 24. They have to live with a lot of this. Now, the other difference, Jeff, is that Democrats do a much better job of creating the right environment for some of their more progressive candidates. I mean, you've got David Hogg, who obviously came to prominence after the Parkland shooting. He runs an organization that has, tens of millions of dollars. They spend big on progressive candidates. The right doesn't really have that. There's not really an ecosystem in which conservatives have an ability to fight back against the establishment. Democrats do. So that obviously makes a big difference that there is on the left an ecosystem to support some of these more radical candidates that we just don't see on the right. The grassroots money, it flows into these groups. It gets to people like Plattner, like Tallarico, and allows them to be able to come out of their primaries. And again, we just don't see that on the right. There aren't, these big, well-funded groups that are supporting, insurgent conservative candidates.
But the problem, the difference for the right and the left, and let's just say Republican and Democrat here, we've been having this fight in the Republican Party probably since the dawn of the Tea Party age. Sure, there were some one-offs before that, but really the real like ideological battle, it's been going on for more than a decade now. And we have these skirmishes and these upstart candidates and these grassroots guys, and they do pick off a seat or two here and there. Where the Democrats, to their success, and what will ultimately be to their detriment, I think, is they never allowed that to really kind of take place. They've always tried to put a stop to it. I mean, they micromanage presidential cycles. You're having Democrat presidential debates during the Hillary cycle in 16 at like 10 o'clock at night on ABC when no one's watching. The fix is in a lot of the Democratic Party politics, but at some point, that dam is going to burst for them, and it feels like we're kind of on the verge of that.
And Jeff, if you look at the power brokers of that, you look at the Nancy Pelosi's, you look at even the Rahm Emanuel types, the architects of that, the ones that had the sway and ability to go to different Democrat factions and say, stay in line, they're gone. They're leaving. Obviously, Nancy Pelosi is retiring. We saw it where Barack Obama obviously was a very big proponent of getting Joe Biden to step aside, thinking that he would kind of have the ability to pull some strings. He didn't realize, I think, how far that DEI movement had gone, that they were truly not going to allow the black woman to be skipped over. So you've got these individuals who were able to kind of keep things together and pull the strings for a really long time. They're losing their sway. They're retiring and going away. You don't have the next generation able to do that. Hakeem Jeffries does not have the ability to keep an AOC in line like Nancy Pelosi clearly did. And so to your point, I think you're spot on, Jeff. I think you're going to continue to see a rift. And those who were able to kind of keep things together and keep the happy face on for Democrats for such a long time, they're gone. And the next generation of leaders have not shown an ability to kind of keep things together like some of them had. Say what you want about Nancy Pelosi, but goodness gracious, did she do a heck of a job in keeping all those Democrats together to beat the brakes off of Republicans? That's done.
Well, she was good at the money. Like, she controlled the purse strings. And it wasn't so much that, I mean, she had won over the Hollywood crowd, the Wall Street crowd, the big money donors and like Silicon Valley. Like, you always had to go through Nancy Pelosi. If you try to go around her, you would pay a price for that. That kept a lot of this in line. But what's happened, like, in Republican Party politics, you have a Freedom Caucus. You have all these sort of right-wing storefronts all over D.C. And I think that they didn't really have the Nancy Pelosi. They didn't really have the one-stop-shop clearinghouse that you had to go through her and you had to win her over. If you went another route, if you went through Steny Hoyer or whatever, then you were on her bad side. And that worked to her advantage. It's just no one has that kind of stroke in the Democratic Party anymore.
Or the Republican Party, Jeff. If there had been a Nancy Pelosi on the right, I promise you we wouldn't have had a Donald Trump. Yet here we are.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hey, Will, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
The Will Hampson on X.
All right, y'all check it out. Will, we always appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming on the program tomorrow, Joey Clark. A couple of guests to be named later. We'll work on that at the conclusion of today's broadcast. Text messages. They text or shot you with a question on air, but your response was nice. We are putting the Ten Commandments in schools. Why are we not doing Pledge of Allegiance school prayer? At least a moment of silence for prayer. Teaching our children demographic pride, battle hymn, and republic. We are doing Ten Commandments, or at least we're trying to do a lot of this. Now, I mean, it's getting pushed back, and the education bureaucrats complain. They don't, on the merits of it, they're not going to tell you, we don't want the Ten Commandments in our schools. They're going to tell, who's going to pay for it to be posted, and how is this going to be handled? And then that gives an off-ramp for a lot of these education policy types who are really just kind of appendages of the school superintendents and the teachers union or whatever to vote no on it. But they are trying. And then one more here. If you were to win a constable election, would you consider yourself a first responder? That's kind of what I see with Barry Moore. And that's not even getting into lying about his service when he was accused Waltz of stolen valor. Also just happening that Trump's vowing to respond to Iran over the Apache that went down in the Strait of Hormuz last night. That from Mike. Yeah, you guessed it, Mike. Thanks for the feedback. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff, you know, thinking about the... Is that the argument being made against Ten Commandments? Because that's probably not their best argument to say there's not money for it, because I'm sure there would be groups mobilized quickly to raise the money to put that in. I think that seems like their worst argument, because you'd say, okay, here's the money, put it in.
Yeah, I've sat through these education policy committee hearings when they put these things up, and they die there. That's where they die, because you'll have a Democrat member, and then a Republican say, yeah, I think you got a good point there. Like, you know, we have a school that can barely pay the light bill, barely pay the plumbing, you know, to be fixed.
Well,
how are we going to afford this?
We could fundraise immediately, and whatever the cost is for the Ten Commandments, there'd be groups come together privately to put the money there. So, I mean, that's a weak argument for them.
You're right, but they don't necessarily want it there. There's also this.
You gotta make another argument then.
They're afraid of being sued by these freedom from religion types and having to take on that legal burden as well. But that's their off-ramp, because a lot of people say, well, heck yeah, let's take on this fight with these guys and let's beat them. But they don't want to do that.
All right, Sheriff, coming up in just a couple minutes on Midday Mobile. Your chance to ask the Sheriff starts in about 7 minutes from right now.
All right, y'all stick around. I got to get out of here. I'll do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. We're